right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are one more time this week to talk more Survivor 40 Winners at War. Dom, you and I have already been in here to do our regular recap, but we are joined today by a very special guest that I actually would much prefer Dom to introduce. This is kind of weird, but I've said before, our guest today has my favorite name ever to be heard pronounced in a British accent. So, Dom, before we bring him in, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, and part of the reason for that is, as you say, we are in the presence of greatness. So, Jordan, how are you doing?
Oh, my God, you were killing me. Hang on, sorry to immediately jump on top of this, but Dom knows exactly what he's doing. It is not the Jordan half of the equation that sounds cool in a British accent.
Well, let me clarify then. It's not the Jordan, it's the Parha of it all.
Yes. So Jordan Parhar, welcome back to the show. And this may go down as the most amateur introduction of all time, and I'm deeply apologetic.
Hey, amateur is my middle name, Colin. So I'm excited to be here. I appreciate you guys having me on. And I would also agree with you on that. Parhar does sound much better with a British accent. So I guess I got to make my way to England at some point. But
you really don't. Absolutely do not need to do that.
Okay. Well, never mind then. But thank you both of you for having me on. It's been a pleasure. Always great to talk to the both of you. And this is going to be fun. My mic was a little rusty. It was hiding in my room. I hadn't used it in so long. So I'm glad to kind of brush some of the dust off of it and talk about some Survivor here.
Mm-hmm. Jordan, are you doing all right over there in Canada? I know that it's become kind of a recurring theme at the top of these Survivor podcasts, but I don't feel it's necessarily inappropriate just given the enormity of the situation that is going on in the world. It does feel worthwhile to just make sure everything's good, at least in relative terms for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm just super fortunate. And like you said, I think it is appropriate to be talking about it at all times because this is something that's on everybody's mind right now. So, I'm doing really well. My family, my loved ones are doing well. So, I hope the same can be said for both of you guys. And I just, last summer I actually went and taught in Kenya for 3 weeks and just seeing, I was in a village there with about like 1,000 people and just kind of seeing how they live and what they have to go through on a regular basis outside of all of this chaos just really makes me realize like, oh my gosh, like we're just so fortunate to live in developed countries during this time. I can't imagine, how difficult it is for, and I know some of those people are going to really be struggling at some point throughout this. So I hate to get dark early on in the podcast, but I just wanted to I'm grateful to be where I live. And I hope you and I hope all the listeners are doing okay. And it's a scary time, but I think the two of you need to be commended for what you do in providing content and a distraction for people during this time when they so desperately need it. So Dom, Colin, thank you to both of you for doing what you do.
Well, hey, as much as I am inclined to say we don't need any kind of commendation for anything we've ever done.
We'll take it, okay?
I understand the spirit in which that is intended, and it is very much appreciated. But for anyone who doesn't know, Jordan, not only among the greatest reality TV podcasters, for my money, that the game has ever seen, but you kind of came up into the game by being a contestant on Big Brother Canada, a game where, of course, everyone is secluded from the outside world. And sorry to kind of sidebar from Survivor 40, which is primarily what we're here to talk about, but I did want to get just your perspective on what we saw go down with BB Can this season, where they've just completely shut down production after the first few weeks. And in particular, I was curious to hear from the perspective of someone who's been in the house as a contestant before, where I'm certain you guys spend a ton of time thinking about and speculating about all the current events that are going around, that are going on around you, that you just are completely clueless about. But even in the infinite free time that you have in there, would anything like a global pandemic cross your guys' minds? Or how would you anticipate, as these contestants are finding out about this, this could even begin to register with them?
Yeah, it's absolutely bananas. Like, it's just beyond anything that, at least from my perspective, I can't speak for everybody else that's played the game, but for me, being, you know, locked away from society, that was the last thing I was thinking about. That didn't, you have so many hours in the day to talk, to think about, just all this random nonsense. And, you know, a global pandemic was just never something that crossed my mind, and it wasn't something that I ever heard talked about on my season of the show. Again, I can't speak for all other seasons. So yeah, it's devastating for, I think, all of those house guests left, just to get that information, because that's just not something you're expecting. And you're already, you know, thinking about your family and your loved ones and your friends. And then just to have this bomb dropped on the house guests, it's just an extra thing to raise anxiety levels, to, you know, just really hurt a lot of these people, I'm sure, to find out that information and what's going on in the world. It is super unfortunate that they did have to cancel production. I'm glad, like, for their safety that gets to happen, just because, you know, if something were to happen to their family members, I think that would be extremely problematic. And I know there are some rumors going around about production staff on the show not feeling safe enough to work in that environment. So I do get it from that perspective for sure. Some of them, you know, if, you know, production doesn't have anybody to work, they just can't put on their show. And then just the provincial order, for those of you that are familiar with that whole situation, the Ontario government basically said, like, this can't really continue. So they didn't really have a choice. I do really feel, though, for those contestants, because when you get voted out, and this is, I mean, again, I can only speak for myself, but I think the majority of people feel this way. When you get voted out of Big Brother or Survivor and you're a huge fan, and it's and I wasn't watching this season, but just from what I've heard, a lot of them were big fans of the show. When you get voted out, it's extremely crushing, because you replay everything in your head. You think about, what could I have done differently, all this other stuff. But at least over time, you get some closure, because you know, hey, this happened. I got voted out for this reason. 99% I'm not going to play again. I can come to terms with that. For these other people, I think it was 11 of them that were left, they're never going to get that kind of closure, because – show, when in reality that's just not going to happen. That might happen for a handful of people, but it's really not going to happen for a lot of them. So I just really feel for them. It's already hard enough just going back out into the real world in general without a global pandemic happening, but now they're being released into the world. They likely don't have jobs, or any, you know, their families don't have their jobs to go back to, so financially things are unstable. They're going to be driving themselves crazy thinking about, oh, am I going to play again? I'm going to play next year. It's okay. When in reality, they probably aren't. So yeah, it's just a really, really not a great thing all around. And I know for a fact there's nobody from none of the executive producers of the show are listening to any podcast with me on it. But if I could speak to them, I would say just somehow give the you know, it's not very much in Canada, but there's $120,000 of prize money. Split that amongst the contestants. Like, they all deserve to have a little bit of something, because they're just going home into just such a crazy, chaotic situation. So sorry for getting on my soapbox a little bit there. But yeah, I just feel for everybody involved.
Yeah, at least as a slight consolation prize, everyone who made it to the point where the game was canceled can spend the rest of their lives convincing themselves that they would have won if it had just stayed. So like 11 people are getting the best case timeline here, not the overall best case timeline, but in terms of avoiding being crushed as a super fan.
Yeah, that is true. And I guess if thinking about I'm trying to think, what would I rather, the way I went down or this? I think I might have chosen this alternative, but that's okay. That's for another day.
They don't have to spend 2 months in the jury house just to not get to vote on finale night.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
Yeah, but Jordan, let's move along to something I will hope I would hope would have a more positive overall vibe than the coronavirus. Survivor Winners at War, you know, this all winners season that we've all been speculating about and hoping for probably close to a decade ever since we saw Heroes versus Villains, is finally upon us. I would imagine that you were just about as excited as everyone else that this theme was finally going to be implemented. I know it seems like at least most people had their own kind of few contestants that made the final cut here that they were really excited to see back in particular for whatever reason they had in mind. For you, if you were such a person, who were those contestants that you were particularly excited to see make the final cut here?
Oh man, so many of them. You know, I like the both of you, I've been a fan of Survivor for so long, and just to see a lot of these players back is just so exciting. And you are right, Colin. I was so pumped when the season came out, and just seeing it play out. I think it's kind of the magical feeling I used to get when I was a little kid watching Survivor. It's back, and I haven't had that in so long. So it's just I just love this season for so many reasons. The person, to answer your question, the people that I probably was most excited to see, Tony for sure. Like, Tony is probably my favorite player of all time at this point. I am also, and as I was saying to both of you before this podcast got started, I'm also a casual with a capital C at this point. But I have always, it's only fitting that Boston Rob is somebody that I was really excited to see play again. Rob was, when I was a kid, I just look up to him so much. I dressed up like Boston Rob for Halloween one year.
Truly the Dallas Cowboys of Survivor.
Yes, exactly. So I was pumped to see Rob, and I thought it was a nice little kind of cool to see Amber. I didn't expect much, and you know, that I wasn't proven wrong there.
If you still have that image of you in the Halloween Boston Rob costume, we're gonna need that for the for the podcast photo, just to let you know in advance.
You know what's funny, Dom? I was thinking actually like a couple weeks ago about it. I had the picture on my previous laptop that I had. And I sold it. I put it up for sale on Craigslist. This was right after I got off my Big Brother season, and I put it on Craigslist for sale. And the guy that came to pick it up was like, "Oh, I need it immediately. I need this right now." And so he's like, "Can I come in an hour?" And I said, "Okay, yeah, sure, that's fine." But then I realized, like, oh, like I have to erase like everything off of here. I don't want him seeing all my Halloween pictures and all this other stuff from my childhood. So I quickly like wiped everything off the computer, not thinking like, oh man, I should have saved all those photos. So the Boston Rob Halloween photo of me does not exist unless one of my friends has it from the Halloween party I went to wearing said costume. But
look, honestly, if that's the most shameful thing that was on that laptop, then you're doing okay for yourself. You know, it's very wholesome.
Now, there were more shameful. There were more shameful things for sure. That was just one of many, Dom.
Yeah. Well, as a Boston Rob fan and casual with a capital C, is Edge of Extinction worthwhile for you this time around? I believe it was the original Edge of Extinction season that we talked, I guess it would have been right around this time last year. And if memory serves, I don't think many people were fans of it back then, but I do believe there is at least a slight turnaround in the public opinion, or at least a willingness to have it on exclusively this season. Is that something that you have become more okay with, or is this still something that is like a fundamental kind of fundamentally like antithetical to what Survivor is?
Yeah, I would have, to be honest, I would have preferred the just a regular season, like I think most people out there would. That being said, which as you just stated, Colin, if there were to be a season where there is Edge of Extinction, this is the season to have it. My biggest complaint though is, and I guess hindsight is 20/20, but this season is so good. It's just been phenomenal in every way. If they were going to have Edge of Extinction, the episodes should have been 2 hours a week or 90 minutes per week. Not the 1 hour, that we get where it's like 40 minutes plus, 20 minutes of commercials. That's just not enough for what we have here. I just feel like they're wasting, the opportunity they have. There's so much content. Like, why not stretch this out? So
and sorry just to jump in, but especially now of all times when so much of like everyone is a captive audience, right? And there's so much stuff that was potentially going to be aired down the pipeline, which is going to vanish from our screens now. What better time? Like, you couldn't plausibly draw out better circumstances or a better excuse to give us the 90 minute episodes or the bonus content that the fans are really craving.
Yeah, and it's just like The Bachelor, okay? Like, I love The Bachelor. I watch it usually every season. But that's 2 hours a week, and that is just like there is, that's like one-fifth as entertaining as a normal Survivor season, if we're being real. And this is like the greatest Survivor season of all time. So it just seems like such a waste, and I wish that Probst would have – fought a little bit more to try to get some more airtime for Survivor, but I maybe he did. Who knows? Hard to say. But I'm sure if CBS would have known what was coming, they would have been more open to lengthening the episodes a little bit.
Yeah, or like The Bachelor, potentially adding a second night now, just with bonus stuff during.
Yeah.
They're airing like reruns of The Unicorn on Friday nights. Why not? No one's going outside and Survivor has a huge fan base. Why not call an audible and put some more Survivor stuff on, one of the lower rated nights? But it definitely, I totally see what you're saying in terms of this being the season where Edge of Extinction is going to be the most acceptable, because we're going to care about everyone who is on the Edge of Extinction and want to see more of pretty much all of them, if not literally all of them. But I also feel like it may be a bit paradoxical, because I certainly remember as an anti-Edge person myself coming in here preseason talking about how this would be the cast of all casts that does not need Edge of Extinction. There is no permutation of boot order where we're going to get down to an uninteresting endgame, as far as I'm concerned. And so it seems like it is a double-edged sword, I guess, having a cast of this magnitude and offering that kind of incentive to keep them on the show for so long. It seems like impossible to... certainly impossible, obviously, to have it both ways, but to know with certainty in either direction, I would say, which way will prove more beneficial for the casual audience, I think is pretty tough.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I definitely do get why they ended up making this call, as much as I dislike it. The concern for me is that until it seems there was this kind of like massive outcry from people on Twitter, they really wanted to make Edge of Extinction a thing going forward and include it at the very least on 41 and probably 42. And that is what terrifies me, is that they do not seem to view it as a mechanism to keep these legendary characters on screen for a long time. It seems like they genuinely view this as a really good thing that should be considered a part of the future of Survivor going forward, and that is horrifying.
I completely agree with what you said there, Colin, but I do think, based on, and I'm sure both of you saw the red carpet premiere interview that Rob Cesternino did with Jeff Probst, In that interview, Probst was just very, very passive aggressive towards Rob, and he seemed to say that from that interview, I took out of it that they're not the feedback they've gotten. They're not going to roll with Edge of Extinction moving forward. But who knows with Probst, and who knows, you know, when the next Survivor season is going to air. If this, you know, COVID-19 crisis is going to continue, they're not going to be able to film, I would think. So maybe some extra time to think about it will cause Jeff to forget about the negative feedback about Edge of Extinction prior to this season. And then carry it forward into 41 and 42. But I'm with you. I hope this is the last time it happens, because it's just – it's unnecessary, and it just completely changes the game.
And where have you landed on the fire tokens?
I like the fire tokens. I kind of think that it's an interesting what did you all say? An extra layer of duplicity?
Yes.
So I do like that, and it makes things – I think it makes things more interesting. It leaves things and I don't know. I mean, I still don't fully know how this is all going to play out, but yeah, I think it's just something extra to be thinking about. It causes – it goes both ways. Like I would have – you know, obviously if it weren't for the fire tokens, I'm assuming – maybe not. But based on the edit that we saw, if it weren't for the fire tokens, perhaps Yule would still be in the game, which I would much prefer than having him get voted out in this last round. But I think it's going to create some very interesting – dynamics in this season and perhaps in the future if it's something that the show continues to run with.
Yeah, I think not only Yule but Sandra would probably still be there if it weren't for the fire tokens. I definitely think it's having a pretty major impact here. And before we dive into the players that are making it to the merge, I did want to get your take on a theme I'm guessing a few people have picked up on developing here in this boot order, Jordan. It seems like the older school players are not having the greatest time of it out here. What has been your takeaway about that?
I think the older school – it's funny. I was talking to my dad about this because we watch every episode together. And I think it's because if we – like let's just look at these old school players that they brought back. Outside of Danny Boatwright and Amber – all of them are massive, massive threats. So I think it's who they chose to come back is the reason why all of them got voted out when they did. I think – I don't think it necessarily is that the quote-unquote new school way to play is the way to go, or that all these new school players are quote-unquote better than the older school players. I and maybe I'm naive. Maybe it's just because – I'm somebody who watched all of these old schoolers growing up, and I just have such an affinity for them. But I just think it's because of who it was, who was out there. If you put out, you know, if we removed Boston Rob and it doesn't seem like he's an old school player, I guess, just because to me it seems like a newer season, but Tyson, Parvati, those middle seasons, those players that were identified as old school players, if we replaced them with Vesepia and with Chris from Vanuatu, I think, you know, I don't think they would necessarily have gotten voted out just because they were old school players. I think those players would have been kept around because people would have thought, oh, well, I can beat these people. I'm going to keep them in the game. So it's just – I think it just comes down to the threat level, really.
Mm-hmm. Knowing what you do about the way that all-star seasons on reality TV tend to operate, just returning players as a concept, you think back to Cambodia where we saw that the final five there was composed of this cluster of like the 28ers and the 29ers, right? The final five was all from those two seasons in the same year. And then we've seen this elsewhere as well, where it feels like it's usually one generation which dominates that season and everyone else kind of gets left by the wayside. Could it be just like this emergent old school versus new school thing, even if no one's going in there saying I have to get out the old schoolers or I have to get out the new schoolers? It seems like a pattern that's just very easy to fall back into naturally.
Yeah, I think that's a great theory, Dom, and I can definitely see that. And I just, from my own perspective, like thinking about the relationships I have with people from Big Brother Canada, the closest relationships I have are with people that were on my season or a year before me or a year after me. Beyond that, I don't really have much of a relationship with a lot of them. So I can definitely see that, and especially with, you know, Survivor being a different show in which there are two seasons per year, then yeah, there's certainly going to be those natural connections based on, the events you go to, the circles you're in, the people you're talking to. You're going to naturally have those connections, whereas your Yul Kwans, your Danny Boatwrights, they're not going to have that because they're just so far removed. So yeah, that's certainly a factor as well, as just having, you know, all of the people that you have that familiarity with. But I think it can go both ways. Like, I think if there would have been, you know, if we would have taken a bunch of people from – if it would have been everybody, like if they would have had winners from All Stars and before, like I think all of those people would have been super tight as well, and they would have been inclined to go after the new school player. So I think, yeah, that's totally a factor. And, you know, this season is certainly highlighting the fact that, you know, pregame relationships, they're just so huge, and there's so many connections on this season in particular. So that is the one, I guess, bummer is, We're never going to get a pure season where we have, you know, 20 just legendary players where they have no prior connection and no pregame biases that are going to cause them to maybe go in a certain direction in the game one way or another. So, yeah, it's certainly something to consider.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So let's get into looking at these players that have made it to this point. We now know the merge is rolling finally next week. Actually, quickly, before we get into the merge itself, what did you think of the decision to split into three tribes and then stay there for quite a while? Because I would say, if I had one bone to pick, and I acknowledge this is kind of leading as far as questioning goes, I did feel like that was potentially a questionable – I don't necessarily disagree with the idea of swapping them into three tribes in the first place, but it felt like it dragged on for a while, and I know a lot of people hold that kind of twist decision responsible for a lot of these big reputations being taken out just for potentially swapping poorly.
Yeah, I would have – I think I was fine with them splitting into three. I'm always a fan of doing that just because I think it creates more possibilities when we do get to emerge. But I remember I was listening to the two of you talk last week, and both of you were very surprised that, it wasn't going to be emerge this previous round. And I was with you, and I think that would have made sense. You had three tribes of four going into the merge. You have 12. I think that would have been a nice, you know, it would have been just nice how that worked out. But, I don't want to be like too, like before Yul got voted out, I wasn't too upset. I thought, okay, this is fine. And then when Yul got voted out, I was choked. So, so I was just being a little bit, I think, results oriented there, at least for myself personally. So I don't necessarily hate it. And I think a lot of these older players, I guess none of them are really left, but a lot of them, they would have merged, you know, at a number like 11 or whatever, a smaller number, whereas I don't know the exact numbers, but from just what I can recall, it seems like these last few seasons the merge has started off at a much larger number. So yeah, I get it. I also am wondering perhaps the reason why they waited to get it down to 11 to do the merge was because they're going to bring someone from the edge back sooner rather than later, but based on the preview to this upcoming episode, we didn't really see that. So I'm not really sure how that's going to work. And at the original Edge of Extinction, didn't Devins come back right at the merge?
Yeah, I would guess someone is about to come back, and they didn't include them. They don't want to tip who it is going to be potentially.
Got it.
But yeah, recently they have been merging. at much bigger numbers. I feel like Samoa was the first time where they merged at 12, which at the time seemed like an enormous number. And then with Cambodia, they did 13 and have done 13 pretty regularly since then. So I thought for sure, of course, instead of playing around where we have three tiny tribes with pretty clear political dynamics, we will bring someone back from the edge of extinction and merge at 13 as usual. So I was totally blown away by that. I think maybe that is just my biggest gripe, is that one final round in three tribes of four instead of merging at 13, including the person from Edge of Extinction, just really seems... I would love to know what decision... what kind of process went into that decision.
Yeah, hard to say.
Not a huge deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway, that was more of a sidebar than I intended. But let's get into things. And Jordan, as a casual with a capital C now entering this merge... who would be your number one, like, rooting interest of the people active in the main game?
Okay, rooting interest would be, without a doubt, is got to be Tony of Who's Left. I think he has no hope at all. He's certainly he's drawing dead, no chance. But yeah, I'm so excited that he made the merge. Like, every episode, I've just been like crossing my fingers and saying, please not Tony, please not Tony. So I'm so glad that Tony has made it this far. I remember listening to, I think didn't you do a bet with Dominic where you said over under four episodes for Tony on Winners at War? I think you might have done that, Colin. I can't remember.
I hope I had the over.
Yeah, I the time listening to that, I thought, oh, it's easily under. There's no way Tony's going to last four episodes. But here we are. He's at the merge, and that's super exciting. And I mean, he does have Sarah, which, you know, is somebody who he can trust and work with. But I don't have much hope for Tony. I guess my big hope is that he just goes crazy and has one last hurrah, one magical, you know, Tony moment before he gets voted out. But I'm not really expecting him to go super deep here. I would be shocked if Tony makes it past two rounds here after the merge, just because it's Tony. He's clearly the biggest threat of everybody who's left in the game. Although I don't know if that's – at least he's the biggest perceived threat of who's left. I think there are still some people who are much bigger actual threats to these other players. But Tony's got no hope in hell.
Do you feel like Tony is generally popular with the casuals? Does Jerry Parhar like Tony?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tony's popular with the casuals. Jerry Parhar is a huge Tony fan. Like, he loves Tony. There's probably some casual people who don't love him, but I think part of the reason why my dad loves Tony is partially because I just love Tony so much, and we just reminisce about some of just the classic Tony moments that have aired over the years. But I still think of these people left for the casual audience, Tony has got to be. Is there a bigger name than Tony that's left? Like, I'm sure there's people that are casuals who actively dislike him and think he's just crazy and whatever. But I do think he's got to be the most recognizable out of all of these people left for the casual audience.
Can we get a casual Jerry segment in here from time to time? Just mix things up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I think my dad is out walking our dog at the moment. But maybe I'll text my dad and see if he's willing to come on for a moment here. But if we can plan things ahead of time, my dad has tons of takes. If you could easily record like so many podcasts with my dad. He's been dying to go on any podcast to talk about Survivor, 90 Day Fiancé, The Bachelor, Love Is Blind, or his new favorite show, Tiger King, which I don't know
yes.
if the two of you have been watching that. That show is phenomenal. We don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but so good.
I recorded an episode on Tiger King with Kirsten yesterday that should be releasing in the next day or two. So
nice.
We are fully on board with all of that. But I have been trying to get Colin's mum in here for a Criminal Minds podcast for years now, and it hasn't happened. So it's good to hear that we can still mix the generations with someone.
Yeah, no, you just let me know anytime. And if anybody listening wants to get Jerry Parhar on a podcast, just reach out and we will make it happen.
Tom, I want to ask you, because I think it's hard not to agree with the premise that Tony probably stands out as the most visible kind of presence reputation-wise among the general public of the people who made this merge. But I'm really struggling to come up with who number two on that list would be. Dom, in your non-casual opinion, what is your take on the casuals and who they would view as the second kind of biggest name that has made the merge?
This might sound stupid, but I think you're actually going to agree with me. It might be Ben, just because his season was, like, recent-ish, and also he has a memorable hat. Am I off base here?
I don't hate that answer at all.
Like, honestly, we talk about the recency bias involved in analysis of seasons and this old school versus new school divide. I don't know if for the vast majority of viewers, old school versus new school is even a coherent concept. I think even with the new school recent winners, a lot of them have mostly faded from their memories by now. Like, if you think, yeah, how many of these people can really remember, like, Adam's season or Sarah's season or, like, Jeremy's season, right? Like, this is... It's only a few years ago, but it is still a few years ago, and I never have a good sense of just how short these people's memories really are. So, yeah, I think Ben is recent, somewhat controversial, but was also, like, a fan favorite for the audience at large, and he has a cool hat. So, yeah, lock it in. It's Ben.
I don't hate that answer at all as far as the casuals are concerned. In terms of reputation among the people who are actually there at the merge, she seems to have done a good job to this point mitigating this kind of threat level, but I would probably guess that Kim might stand out among the pack here in terms of people that everyone is not going to have a difficult time talking themselves into being a big threat at pretty much any point. Jordan, what have you made of Kim's performance to thus far? Because certainly not the same level of surprise as seeing Tony here at the merge, but it wouldn't have shocked me at all if people had been gunning for Kim early.
Yeah, I think with Kim, it's been interesting because the first time she played, you could argue she played against the weakest cast out of the last 20 seasons.
I would argue that.
Yeah, pretty easily. Perhaps the weakest – I wouldn't say the weakest cast of all time, but certainly one of the weaker casts that has – been played in the last decade or so. Whereas this time, now she's going against the most difficult cast that's probably ever been assembled. So seeing her struggle a little bit early on was interesting. I thought, you know, she never faced adversity on One World from what I can remember. So seeing her survive and avoiding getting voted out when her name was getting thrown out there was interesting, and it was good that she was able to recognize, like, hey, like, I'm not in control here. I'm clearly on the outs. So even though she had never really experienced that before, so I'm excited to see I'm impressed with her game. I think she's done well. I liked this segment in the last episode where she's talking to Denise and Jeremy and saying, hey, like, the last time I played, I was in control of things, and this time I want to be in control of things again. And so I'm glad she's in that headspace, and I'm excited to see what she's going to do moving forward. She does have an idol, right?
I believe she has an idol that is not time limited, right, Dom?
Kim does have an idol. Yes.
She does have an idol. So she's got that idol. She's got Jeremy. She's got Denise. She seems to have a relationship with Tony as well. So, and she can go back to her. I mean, I don't know if she will, but she's probably got somewhat of a relationship with Sophie based on that initial idol and those original players from the Red Tribe. What is it? Are they DeKal? Yes. So
the Red Tribe is what we'd go with.
The Red Tribe. Yes, the Red Tribe. So yeah, I'm excited for Kim. Kim was somebody who, coming into this season, I thought was easily one of the greatest players of all time. That remains to be seen as far as I'm concerned. I want to see what she can do against this field of players. If she can emerge and make it all the way to the end and pull off some crazy moves here, then that's certainly going to keep her. I'm still going to hold her up high in terms of the legacy rankings of these players. But if she doesn't, then I don't know if that's necessarily going to hurt her. Well, I guess maybe for me it would, in terms of thinking of her as, I would no longer think of Kim as one of the quote unquote greatest of all time or greatest to ever play. Maybe that's because I've become a casual at this point, but I don't know. I want to see what Kim can do here.
So
I think we were always destined to be not underwhelmed, but left wanting more from Kim this season, even as big Kim fans and people who really rate her game highly, because as you say, this is not the cast of One World. There's no chance that she could play that absolute, completely dominant game from start to finish once again, especially when she's already done it once and people know what she's capable of doing. So she was always going to have to tone it down and was always going to have to face these extra challenges. And those could very easily have led to her being voted out pre-merge. And that was our big fear coming in for Kim. And we threw this question around, hopefully as a hypothetical, but we knew we might have to confront it soon, of if Kim is just the third boot on this season, what does that do to her legacy, where she goes from being one of the consensus greatest of all times to just a footnote on this most iconic season? Instead, she's made it to the merge, but we always knew that for that to happen, she was going to have to lay low, just fly completely under the radar, not try and assert herself the way that she did before, because then people would see exactly what she was doing. So unless she was truly just like three tiers above literally anyone who's ever played and could miss this cast as well, which turns out is not the case, then we were always going to see a more normalized portrayal of Kim. And it wasn't going to be this superwoman edit that we had in the past. And so I think as Kim fans, we just have to be happy that she's still there and still has a shot. And, you know, edit-wise, it doesn't look like she's going to be taking home the title again, which is unfortunate, but she is at least poised to maybe make a deep run, and that's all you can really ask for at this stage.
I would say Kim is someone who entered this season with a reputation that had nowhere to go but down, as far as most people were concerned, and even after getting off to a rockier start than you would like to get off to, just seemingly by virtue of being perceived to be connected with Boston Rob and his coalition when all of them were still part of the main game, a big consideration for me is finally getting to see Kim face some adversity. I totally agree that her first season was, relative to pretty much anything anyone else has had to combat, as a Survivor winner, a cakewalk, and getting to see her play against the most talented cast of all time was going to mean a lot to me. And I come out of this pre-merge, even though she certainly doesn't look anywhere near as godly as she did on One World, still feeling roughly the same way I did entering this season about Kim Spradlin, which is that she is still, for me, one of the most talented players I've seen to this point based on the episodes. Maybe there is a bunch of footage that was burned back in Fiji of Kim screaming at everyone, but as far as I can tell, even when her back was totally up against the wall, she remained calm, she stayed cool with everyone, and now is reaping immense benefits of that kind of grace under fire, and is entering this merge with, say it with me, a lot of options at her disposal. And I continue to feel nothing but reasons to believe in Kim Spradlin as a Survivor player. And it would honestly at this point take her probably actively misplaying her own way out of the game for me to come down too far on her. At this point, I feel like I have seen Kim in the best of times, and I have seen Kim in pretty close to the worst of times, finding yourself immediately on the outs in a game of Survivor. And in either scenario, I feel like she has taken the exact approach that I would want to see.
Yeah, I can get behind that for sure.
All right. So with Kim, it seems like, as you alluded to, Jordan, we have a pretty tight bond here, coming off of this swap tribe entering this merge with both Jeremy and Denise. It did seem like had this tribe lost this last immunity challenge, it probably would have been Tony's time, because these three feel good about each other. And I actually feel like one of the less talked about people to this point, but one of the more interesting people now entering this post-merge scenario is Jeremy Collins. What have you made of Jeremy's game thus far?
I love Jeremy. Like he's another guy I was excited to see play again. I think he's done a great job. I think the way they handled, that Ethan vote earlier on, I think, he's just somebody who can naturally connect with people. He's somebody who doesn't have, I don't think Jeremy has any weaknesses. Like, I think if we're talking about who is the best, like, all around player when we're talking about all of the aspects of the game, I think there's an argument to be had about Jeremy being that guy. I mean, what I do like about Jeremy's game as well, and just from what I've seen from this season and just from him in the past too, is he's a guy who's confident in himself. He's not somebody who's going to overthink anything. Like, he's not going to try to get fancy like Sandra did with her play with Denise, where she's giving Denise that, you know, the idol, stuff like that. I just don't see that happening with Jeremy. He's got those connections to the original Blue Tribe or Cele. He's got this alliance of three, or, you know, four if we want to include Tony. And then the other thing with Jeremy is he's super tight with Natalie. And I think if we're betting on somebody to return into the game, it's going to be Natalie. So if he's got her as well, then I think Jeremy's in a really good spot. The problem is if we're looking at the big threats for the players that are out there right now, Jeremy's got to be up there for almost everybody. I think the fact that we see these confessionals of him saying he's starting to worry about Tony a little bit, that concerns me a little bit with Jeremy, because in order for Jeremy to make a run, I think he needs to have Tony in front of him. If Tony is gone, I think Jeremy instantly, of the players that are out there outside of Kim, I think if we're just talking about physical threats, Jeremy's got to be number one. Am I wrong here? I think he's there's nobody else who I know. Wendell, you could argue is compares perhaps to him in some ways, but I just feel like Wendell is the poor man's version of Jeremy in every way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would probably agree that Jeremy stands out in the physical regard for sure, if not as a threat in many other ways for people. Dom, how do you feel like Jeremy stacks up in the like consensus rankings of threats here at the merge? Because I know we've talked about Tony and Kim potentially standing out above the pack, but I wouldn't be that surprised if Jeremy wasn't too much further down the list.
It's surprising to say on a season with players of this caliber, but I think a lot of the players who are left are threats more so because people don't trust them, and they are not giving people enough reasons to trust them, more so than because there's an active case to make for them being a threat, if that makes sense. So, you know, Adam, I think, could easily be a merge boot if people just have no idea where his head is at, and he's an easy person to rally the votes against. You know, same thing for Ben, same thing for Wendell, and that there are a lot of people on that list. Jeremy's someone on the other end where it's so tough to not feel good about Jeremy, which, if people are aware of that, then makes him a threat. And it's exactly the same playbook that he used to win a season before. So if anything, you might think that like a Jeremy is a bigger threat than a Tony, because Tony, you can trust, is going to kind of play overtly out in the open and do some crazy stuff. And if your whole game is modeled around predicting future outcomes, like if for a Kim, for instance, that might be hard to swallow. But in general, I would be more scared of the Jeremys who can just work their way into any group that will have them, versus someone who could play themselves out of the game and no one would really be surprised.
Yeah, and I also thought it was interesting you brought up the idea of Natalie returning from Edge of Extinction. Certainly one of the people heavily in the mix to be that re-enterer. I would also say Tyson probably with some equity there, and probably Boston Rob now with all of these fire tokens got to be a consideration as well. But in any of those cases, I would say Jeremy probably benefits from whoever returns from Edge of Extinction.
Absolutely.
It's worth noting as well that when we talk about who the challenge threats are, a lot of them are stuck on the Edge of Extinction right now. You know, Rob, Parvati, Tyson, Natalie, so many of the game's biggest athletes and challenge competitors have been voted out already. So it's tough to gauge who left is really in the same league. And honestly, I think the biggest challenge threat of anyone making the merge might be Sophie, who we've seen dominate all of the puzzle challenges she's taken part in. you know, she won a clutch immunity against Ozzy to win her season and keep him out of the finals. And she's always been an underrated athlete, I think. She's always done great in the team challenges. So maybe Sophie is going to emerge as the challenge threat and not just the strategic threat that everyone takes her to be so far.
Yeah, I could definitely see that being a very good call. Jordan, what have you made of Sophie to this point? Someone who I would say it wouldn't have surprised me at all to hear that Sophie's going to make the merge, but I probably would have taken the under on just the sheer amount of visibility and insight we've gotten to hear from Sophie to this point, who I would say has emerged as at least one of the bigger characters through this pre-merge portion. Have you been liking this new version of Sophie, who is now all grown up?
Yeah, I think it was funny, like just thinking back to the preseason, I remember listening to you guys, and I believe it was Dom who just brought up the fact that, look, like Sophie, when she first played, was, what, 21? And now this is almost 10 years later. Like, we are getting a completely, you know, different person. And I think that was just so on point.
Sorry to cut in, but I will add, just because I feel like I was almost demeaning in setting that question up, Sophie at age 21 is far more of a grown-up than I am at age 32.
Well, I thought you were just jumping in to correct Jordan giving me any credit for having a good take in the past, but good to see that's not the case.
But that is the thing. I mean, Sophie was, I mean, incredibly impressive just winning when she did. Like it's hard. It's winning these games is so difficult, but it is. As somebody who played one of these games when they were, you know, I was 21 when I played. I just think about, you know, me then versus me now, and just the knowledge and life experience you gain in your 20s is just it's massive. And I think for Sophie, the fact that she won that first time, incredibly impressive. But now we're getting an even better version of her, and we're seeing that on the show. I've been so impressed with Sophie, and I would argue, like, she. Does she have the most equity, like, to win of the players left? Like, I think there's certainly a chance. I do worry that, you know, now that Yule is gone, her nerd shield, like, there, I think a lot of people might look at Sophie as being the smartest player out there, which I don't think is wrong. I think she is the smartest player that's left in the game, the best player probably strategically. But overall, she's done great at making connections. She's seemed to navigate things really well so far. She has an idol. She's got an extra fire token. So I think she's in a position to do really well. And I think even the casual people watching this show are recognizing how good Sophie is. And this is what, the fifth time we've mentioned him on this podcast, but Jerry Parhar, my dad, like, he's been so impressed with Sophie, and he didn't know who Sophie was a month ago. So I gotta give credit to Sophie. That first game, I think for me, part of the reason why maybe I didn't give Sophie as much credit as she got was because of that connection to coaches, you know, Cult Alliance, where they just steamrolled everybody and nobody else really had a chance. And Sophie was a part of that. So I didn't necessarily – we hadn't really seen Sophie in – these types of situations, but she's thriving, and I think she's in a really good position to potentially win the game.
Yeah, it's not survival, it's thrival. But I actually maybe would go the other way. I think that now that Yule is gone, when I was thinking about what kind of danger Sophie could fall into, the scenario that was at the front of my mind was, well, she's too tightly associated with Yule, and Yule would stand out as, you know, this big schemer, this very smart guy who's playing for this amazing cause, and who also would be the one old school person left in the game. And just, she could be collateral damage. You know, we've seen this pattern a lot,
right?
Of you think someone has an idol, so you vote for their second in command or for someone else in their alliance. And I could see, like, Sophie being like an accidental casualty in a plot to take out Yule. Or if everyone else is coalescing against Yule, then it could be, you know, Yule, Sophie, and Nick or something against the world, and that's a tough spot to be pigeonholed into. Now that Yule is gone, I think that Sophie, that target is gone, and she might have the freedom to go basically wherever she wants.
Yeah, one thing, to go back to Sophie winning at such a young age just quickly, I feel like we have not, and people have not, given Sophie enough credit for, in general over the years is it does not tend to go that well for people who win these reality shows at age 21. Like, I would say Sophie and Ian Terry really stand out as two who have pretty much all of them go at least slightly, if not fully, just off the deep end.
Yeah, it's an excellent observation.
I wonder where, if you had one Big Brother, Jordan, maybe you would be like on your fourth stint in rehab right now.
I love the pause there from Jordan, who clearly could give so many examples, but is being very discerning in what he chooses to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get in trouble with what I'm going to say. I will just say, I think just thinking about myself at that time, had I come into a large amount of money, and you know, the amount on Big Brother Canada is significantly less than what you get on a show like Survivor or even Big Brother US. I certainly think that. It could have been a little dangerous for sure. So just more power to the Sophies and the Ians of the world for not only winning, and Steve Moses is another guy in more recent memory, but for not only winning, but for handling themselves respectfully and maintaining some level of credibility after winning in terms of the public eye, because it's hard when you're young. You get thrown into this pseudo fame through social media, and then you also have a lot of money. It's kind of a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Sophie benefited from being in med school and knowing, like, all right, all that money is spoken for. I have to spend it all on this. that could potentially have been a factor there. But
And Sophie, like, was, as my understanding, came from a pretty wealthy family, was not hard up for money to begin with. So I think she has experience handling herself well, even above and beyond the fact that she's just a responsible adult, even at that age, and was not going to blow it on partying and drugs and whatever else is gone towards for other people.
And that's actually something else I just want to quickly touch upon on a side note. I think a big reason why, Dom, a lot of these people, you know, you mentioned Sophie comes from a wealthy family and she, you know, she had her priorities in order, I guess, before going on Survivor. It's very rare, and I'm coming from a Big Brother's perspective, but it's very rare that people go on to these kinds of shows. Survivor has more, I would say, quote-unquote normal people, but on Big Brother, a lot of the people that go on are people who do not have good connections with their family or do not have good role models or things to look up to. They have pre-existing issues. So I think that let's be honest, you kind of have to be a little bit insane to want to go on Big Brother and have somebody film you, have your every move on the live feeds for an entire summer or 75 days if you're in the Big Brother Canada house. So I think perhaps that's also part of the reason why some of these young winners have just gone off the deep end, is because there's a reason why they applied and went on these reality shows in the first place. And it's because they didn't really have maybe the greatest support networks going into these shows.
Yeah, and you see this recurring criticism when it comes to The Bachelor, where it's like, well, why are so many of the women on the show these early 20s wannabe models or Instagram influencers, and why are all of the male leads in the show these kind of bland fuckboys who just, you know, are not responsible adults? And it's like, well, these are the people who have the time and the wherewithal to apply for a show like this.
Yeah.
If you want to get a wider scope in casting, then you have to kind of relax the conditions and be honest about what you're asking for these people.
Yeah, and I particularly in the case of BBUS, which is now between being sequestered ahead of time and then spending 100 days in the house or in the jury house, that is a major amount of time that you need to just completely take away from your real life. And most people who are in a position to do so, as we have seen, I would say, are generally in a situation where just getting the jury stipend is life-changing money for them, and winning $500,000 is inconceivable and a completely different reality than they've ever been a part of. And it's kind of like, I would say, a lot of reality winners experience like a micro version of like the curse of lottery winners who just have no idea what to do with it once they're finally rich.
So true. Yeah, that's exactly it. It's just inconceivable to have that amount of money. It's unfortunate.
Weird kind of sidebar there. Sorry.
Yeah.
But I feel really, really good about what I've seen from Sophie thus far, and remain optimistic about her going forward. And we should circle back because I talked about this Kim, Jeremy, and Denise trio, and I could see Sophie potentially fitting in with them, but we kind of skipped over Denise herself, who had a big week 2 weeks ago now, I guess, at this point, with everything that went down with Sandra. Are you someone who entered this season as what you would consider like an active Denise fan, and how have you been feeling about her to this point?
Yeah, Denise is somebody who, she doesn't fit the archetype of somebody who would normally go on Survivor. She being a sexual therapist, somebody who is very even keeled, seems like, it'd be really fun to hang out with in real life, but also somebody who is like, probably like wise and could give you advice on a lot of things. Like Denise is just great. And it just, you know, we saw in Philippines, she went to every single tribal council and she was able to fit in with all different types of people, whether that be, you know, Mike Scoopin or Abby Maria or, I can't remember, did Penner want her gone? It doesn't matter. Regardless, she's just got that skill set that I think not many people have in life, and certainly not many people have on Survivor. So I've been incredibly impressed with Denise. She's somebody who I think I was probably too low on coming in. Like, I remember listening to your auction draft with the two of you and Kaz and Dominic, and Denise went for like some crazy price. I think, Colin, didn't you buy her? I can't remember.
Kaz got her, I believe.
Kaz got her. Okay, Kaz got her. So Kaz and you were bidding back and forth. And I just remember thinking like, wow, like that's like really high for Denise. But seeing her out here again, it just immediately, showed, okay, yeah, like she's definitely one of the best players that's out there this season and has one of the best chances to win this game. So I've been incredibly impressed with her. When she pulled that move on Sandra, she, I think, became my dad's second favorite player in the season just because he just disliked Sandra so, so very much. So we are big fans of Denise Stapley in the Parhar house.
That's excellent to hear. So another person I could see, if this trio remains intact and is looking for people to bring in to form a kind of new majority here, this Jeremy, Denise, and Kim group, not only Sophie, but alongside Sophie, it seems like Sophie and Sarah seem to have a good connection going here. And Sarah, I feel, has been standing out as one of the most impressive players to me over the pre-merge portion of this admittedly all-time impressive cast. Are you on roughly that same page, or is Sarah registering potentially less with people who are not watching these episodes three times a week?
No, Sarah's definitely registering more than in previous seasons. I really couldn't stand Sarah in Game Changers. I found her very I didn't enjoy her game. I don't know what it was. I was not liking Sarah in that season. And to be honest, I'm still not probably the biggest Sarah fan. But I can definitely like those scenes they were showing with her and Tyson, you know, earlier on in the season kind of showed like, okay, she's got maybe a little bit of a personality here. She is, you know, able to build some connections with people that are not police officers. I give Sarah credit. I think she's played well. I think she's in a good spot. And I think like Jeremy, she's a confident player. She's not somebody who's going to overthink things or overplay things. Like, she easily could have played her vote steal earlier in the season to save Tyson, but she didn't. So I think that shows she's not going to take a ton of big swings necessarily. But I think that's probably a good thing in a season like this. If she can just stay even keeled, she's in a good position. She's got, you know, that relationship with Tony, and she's got, and perhaps that's actually, I think that could be the one thing, that could hurt Sarah, is like Dom was saying earlier, perhaps, you know, maybe people start wanting to take a swing at Tony if he starts making some big moves, and Sarah just ends up being collateral damage. But if she sticks with Sophie and sticks with Ben, and the original Red Tribe, then I think she's in a good position, because who's scared of Sarah, of based on who's left in the game? I think there are much bigger threats, and I didn't fully dive into all the preseason coverage. I do recall hearing people saying, everybody wanted to get rid of Sarah, but it doesn't really seem like that has been the case so far. So I think she's in a good spot, and similarly to Sophie, and perhaps she will go farther than Sophie, just because if we're comparing the two of them, Sophie is better in the challenges. Sophie is I would argue physically, like, Sophie's probably even stronger than Sarah. And I think strategically, Sophie's clearly the bigger threat as well. So I think Sarah might easily just skate by and once again make her way to a final tribal. And I could see her winning the season again.
Yeah. Dom, you've talked for a long time about Sarah's game and Game Changers being one of the most impressive in history for your money. And I was always a bit skeptical of that, but kind of like what I was saying about Kim earlier, where I certainly regarded her as one of the all-time elite players. And I already feel like, just having seen what I've seen to this point, I feel comfortable like locking in that take, barring some sort of absolute disaster on her end. Even as someone who was kind of skeptical of Sarah entering this season, and I will readily acknowledge, obviously, this is a heavily edited TV show, but if I were of the Dom Harvey school of thought, I would feel very validated by what I have seen out of Sarah to this point. Do you feel that sense of validation, Dom?
Are you giving me validation, Colin?
I'm attempting to. I'm trying to give you an opportunity to say you've been onto this the whole time.
Yeah, well, to me, the thing that really stood out about that Game Changers win was just how adaptable she was and how able she was to bridge what we saw then as like this old school versus new school divide with these very different play styles. And in a season where the old school people are being massacred and the new schoolers are taking over, I think that's a good spot to be in. It's to have the ability to play a new school game, but with the understanding that comes of, you know, the sense of perspective that comes with being an old schooler too. And I think she's really displayed that. And yeah, we've seen a lot more of her personality, even in this pre-merge portion so far, than we saw in her two seasons combined, including her winning season. So I think she's able to let her hair down, so to speak, a little bit more, while also playing a game of the caliber that you would expect from her.
Yeah, I think it's entirely possible that Sarah looks better through the pre-merge of this season than she did in the pre-merge of her winning season, at least as far as I would be concerned. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye out on Sarah, and I feel like Sarah and Jeremy is another one in this same kind of camp for me. I feel like they are right where they would want to be. I don't think either of these are people who would say they want to enter the merge with like a locked in group that they feel like can just steamroll the whole way. I feel like these are players who benefit from things kind of being in flux and people just feeling good about them when a game of Survivor is going to be utter chaos no matter what. There's just no such thing as running it from the merge forward these days. So feeling very good about Sarah there. Jordan, I feel like one of the most complex personalities that we've kind of seen emerge during this pre-merge portion of the game, and I am very curious to find out where the casuals are coming down this time around on Adam Klein.
Oh, Adam. Full disclosure, like, I love Adam. I am like the both of you, I am an Adam. I don't know. Can't remember what you said last week. You were an Adam Bias podcast. You're waiting for him to make a move where you can call him out on it. I'm with you on that. I think the casual perception, like, I think if I were to find my dad and ask him right now, like, what's your thoughts on Adam? I think my dad would say he's played a really bad game so far and he's not doing very well. But if we're really looking, so I'm guessing that's the casual perspective, especially, you know, the Boston Rob thing that happened. I think if it had happened with another player, perhaps the casuals might not have thought it was such a horrible, horrible move and horrible, horrible mistake. But the fact that it was Boston Rob that it happened with, I think that really just emphasized and just put an exclamation mark on just the error that Adam made. And from my perspective, I think Adam made – I totally get what he was doing, and I think it worked out fine, really, in the end. He's made the merge. There are some people who definitely feel he's an untrustworthy player. But at this point, I mean, nobody – I think moving forward, you know, he's – yes, okay, he's been off on a couple things so far, but – I don't think we can really, and again, it's probably because I'm biased and I've met Adam and I love Adam and he's just such a good guy. But I can't really fault him for a lot of the stuff that's happened to him so far this season. I mean, other than the Boston Rob thing, I think he's made all the right calls. And like the two of you were saying in terms of the you know, last week, like the vote where Boston Rob ended up going home, even if, okay, yeah, maybe you're not, he's not in with Sophie and Sarah, but I mean, if Ben is already with them, there's nothing really else he could have done on that vote. He had no chance there. So I think the merge is where Adam's going to thrive. I really think this is where he's going to make a little bit of a comeback here. He does have that quote unquote untrustworthy reputation, but nobody's afraid of Adam. And I think of all of these players, there's nobody that has been preparing their entire lives for this moment more than Adam Klein has. So I think he's in a good spot. I don't think people are going to worry about him. And I think he's got a few things up his sleeve. So I would not be shocked if Adam made a run to end this season, just because I just believe in him. And I think he did. I think there were several times in Millennials and Gen X where I felt, you know, I think the consensus on Adam was similar. I think people thought, oh, Adam's making these bad moves. He's not going to do anything. And then all of a sudden he went on this run and he ended up winning the game. So he's a charismatic guy in real life. We're not really getting all of that on the show. So I'm an Adam believer. I think he's going to bounce back, and I think he's going to make a bit of a run here.
Mm-hmm. I could definitely see him being the merge boot, but if he's not the merge boot, I feel like we are in store for an extended Adam storyline in all likelihood. And then the other person that has been on this post-swap tribe with this Sarah and Sophie pair along with Adam is Ben Dumbs, second most recognizable person left on the cast here. What have you thought of Ben to this point? I guess, what were your expectations for Ben entering this season, and how has he met or failed to meet those?
Yeah, so I am not a Ben fan coming into this season. I feel like you and I were I think Dom is on the same page as well. But Colin, I feel like you've been more vocally against Ben. But in the preseason, you said, look, like, he's in a good spot. Who's going to want to get rid of Ben? He could, like, yes, he strategically is very weak, but nobody's really going to be worrying about Ben. And on this season, he's coming across as a very likable guy, somebody that I think people want to work with. And now that Boston Rob is out of the picture, that was really the only – well, I guess Adam is there too. Ben seems to have some conflict with him. But outside of those two, Ben seems to be getting along with everybody very well. The only thing with Ben is I feel like – I just kind of think at this point he's kind of been skating by. He hasn't really had to do much. I don't believe in him at all strategically. And I think socially, yeah, he's in a good spot, but there's going to be a point where it gets down, I think, to final seven, final six, where Ben is probably going to be one of the biggest physical threats left in the game. And I think people will also remember, the fire challenge. And that's something that, you know, who's good at making fire, that's going to perhaps paint a target on some of these people. And I think Ben is going to have a target on his back because of that, because he's won that challenge before. So I've been pretty positive, I think, about everybody we've talked about so far. I don't think Ben really has much of a shot here, from my perspective. Who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he could have losing finalist finish, but I just don't really see a scenario in which Ben is the winner of Winners at War.
Yeah, I've said a lot of things about Ben in Heelers versus Hustlers over the years, and I do feel bad if it comes across in a meaningful way, like it is about specifically Ben, that I object to in that scenario. It is not virtually at all to do with Ben. It could have been anyone. It is the production interference that I object to. It is anyone who is having a season completely broken to hand them idol after idol and insert a random fire challenge to give them another shot at making the finals. That I would have that kind of reaction towards anyone. And I am very much enjoying this version of Ben, who is not just constantly being shoved down our throat as the only guy we must be rooting for. And I think Ben this time around has been a much more probably honest version of himself in terms of how he comes across on TV. And I think he has benefited from that. Sorry for a terrible pun there, but I am really enjoying Ben Driebergen on season 40 here, when it is in a much different role than we saw him on season 35. I think he is a lot of fun in this kind of goofball free agent kind of slot. I think Ben is a really interesting person in the mix here at the merge. I don't anticipate him being a big decision maker or a big move maker, but I have found myself truly and non-ironically enjoying Ben on this season. It is genuinely just the context of season 35 that I object to.
Yeah, I would co-sign all of that myself. And we, as we've said several times in the past, we are officially a Ben Prodi. Okay, start that again. Pro Ben Driebergen podcast. Try saying that five times fast. You won't do it any better than I did.
well, you couldn't say it one time slow.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Colin. But I think that stance has mostly held up through these opening batch of episodes. And going into the merge, again, he's one of these people who, if he avoids that early spotlight, I think, like, it's tough to construct scenarios where he gets voted out in a purposeful way. It's going to be through some hilarious accident, which is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah. So very, I feel like Ben is one of the higher variance players entering this merge. It wouldn't surprise me to see him leave next week, the week after that, or it also wouldn't surprise me to see him last for a while and make a deep run here. I don't think winner is looking too likely at this point, but that is just fine with me. I'm happy to have Ben Driebergen in this zone that I would say he generally belongs in as a survivor player. So we have this other tribe now that just lost Yule. Only three of them left here, and they are going to be entering the merge potentially as a cohesive unit, but TBD on that front. This is definitely a group of players, I would say, that would not necessarily be reluctant to pursue their own individual interests above this post-swap group. Let's get into this post-swap blue tribe a little bit, and I definitely want to hear what you have to say about Wendell and the way that he has been coming across this season. I feel like he is probably the runaway in terms of looking like a completely different person than he did the first time around. What has been your semi-casual take on Wendell 2.0?
Yeah, it's definitely somebody whose stock I think is dropping amongst the casuals. At least for me, have not really liked this version of Wendell. My dad was a big Wendell guy back in Ghost Island. He has jumped off that train. He's not liking the arrogance of Wendell that we're seeing this season. I don't know. like I guess I kind of get it. Like, I understand Wendell's trying to, you know, play this cutthroat game, and he, you know, he just won, and he deserves to, I guess, have some level of an ego. He's a winner of this game. He played a really great game the first time, but I'm not been impressed. I don't like how he's just really, and again, this is probably a lot of the editing. You know, we're only seeing such a small amount of what's actually going on out there. But it's just not been a good look for Wendell. I think the arrogance is going to catch up to him at some point. But that being said, I mean, he does seem willing to cut anyone at any time. So I think we could see some big plays by Wendell within these next few rounds, and especially this first merge vote, I think, is going to be especially intriguing with Wendell in the mix. And I think, you know, I still think Nick and Michelle are going to go along with him. We'll see if that does happen. But I'm curious to see, like, how is he going to interact with, you know, the people that weren't originally on the Blue Tribe? How is he going to interact with Jeremy, who Wendell has said prior to this season, Jeremy was like his hero and somebody he like really looked up to? Like, how is that going to go? I'm very curious. I guess Wendell could pull something off at the end here. He's certainly shown he's capable in the past. But I'm not a fan of this start, and the fact that his, I guess, number one ally, Michelle, is also kind of skeptical about him, I think that says a lot, and I think that does not bode well for him long term.
Yeah, I think both of us in the main episode we recorded this week echoed that philosophy. It's just odd to see Wendell, who I think I at least saw signs of it. I thought the cracks started to show a little bit at times in Ghost Island, but you think back to that season, if there was one word to describe Wendell, it was kind of cool or unflappable. And this season, he's certainly flapping a lot. You know, he's out there twisting in the wind.
Yeah, it's kind of like I'm just thinking like in Heroes versus Villains. I remember watching that way back in the day and seeing like JT on the Heroes tribe, and just remembering, you know, see how JT played in Token Chains, and then you watch him on, and I haven't seen Heroes versus Villains in years, so correct me if I'm wrong, Dom, but it just seemed like at that point, like in Heroes Villains, JT tried to change his game so drastically, and it just, I don't know, I guess he wasn't as negative as Wendell appears to be right now, but at the same time, it's just odd seeing this, it's somebody who seems like they're a completely different person at this point.
Yeah, we said with JT in all of his returning appearances, basically, that it felt like he was playing with house money. You know, he played one of the easiest games in terms of cruise control from start to finish of all time. And so once you've done that, you know it's never going to get that easy again. And you know you've proven to yourself the limits of what you can do. So why not go out there and just play balls to the wall and do everything you can to at least entertain yourself and the viewers, right? And on this season, part of the excitement of the premise is to see lots of people out there with that mentality. It's, they don't have anything to prove to themselves. I guess Michelle does, but she luckily is getting to prove that to herself this season. But for most of them, they can go out there and just play the game that they want to play, and not the game that they feel like they have to play based on their circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like Nick and Wendell are in pretty similar positions here. Maybe they're perceived differently by the rest of the people at the merge, but they've been on the same tribe the whole time. And I was anticipating, after how solid they seemed on the original Red Tribe with Yule and Sophie, that as soon as they drew the buffs at the swap, okay, lock it in. All of Nick, Wendell, and Yule are going to make it to the merge now. This is as easy as you can draw it up for the your tight day one alliance to all swap together. And now that they have turned on Yule, I'm going to be really curious to see how Sophie in particular, but potentially others, react to that decision to bring Michelle along to the merge instead of one of the original Red Team members. And maybe that's not something that anyone is even going to particularly care about, but I would anticipate at least Sophie and maybe Sarah and Tony or other people from that original Red Tribe are going to have some pretty meaningful takeaways about what that may mean. So, Jordan, Nick has been someone that we haven't gotten to see a ton of to this point, I would say, but where have you landed on him this time around based on what we have gotten to see?
Yeah, I think Nick's playing a solid game. I think he, the last decision, that's so tough, and I'll have to listen to your podcast from this week to get your take on the Yule vote. But yeah, part of me, I mean, I get where him and Michelle were coming from with voting out Yule, but Wendell just seems like such a wild card and somebody who you had like you can't really get any read on whatsoever. Whereas at least with Yule, yes, he's a huge threat, and yes, he's incredibly intelligent. But I think with Yule, at least you know, Nick could have felt maybe a little bit more stable in having some trust there. Like, it didn't seem like Yule was gunning for Nick at any point. Like, I feel like Nick could have made that play a little bit later on. But regardless, I think he's doing fine. I think he's got two fire tokens. He's got that relationship with Michelle. We'll see if that becomes a strong alliance moving forward. But yeah, similar spot to Wendell. He's kind of in this, he's not really a free agent, but maybe he kind of is. But I think maybe Nick's a guy that people are going to want to bring in. They're going to want to work with. I don't think anybody is afraid of Nick, which is really going to bode well for him. Like, I think he played a solid game the first time. I don't think he gets enough credit, Nick. So I think moving forward, he could easily, I think, just if he can get past this merge vote, I think he could skate by, and I think he could be around for quite a while. But I feel like I've said that about so many of these remaining players. It's going to be so hard to say what happens, but if you're asking me who's in a better position, I think moving forward, Nick or Wendell, I think I'd rather be Nick at this point. Like, I just think that with what we've seen of Wendell so far, I feel like it doesn't seem like he's going slowing down anytime soon in terms of being so outspoken at tribal council and just in general, like in camp when talking to people. So hopefully for Nick's sake, he can take some of the heat off of him, and then Nick can regroup with Sophie and Sarah and move forward from there.
Yeah, Nick, his situation entering this merge kind of reminds me of the old Mitch Hedberg joke. I don't have a girlfriend, but there is a woman who would be mad if she heard me say that. Nick, it's like, I don't have an alliance, but there are a couple people who would be upset if they heard me say that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, so that one could also go any number of ways, I would say. And that leaves us here with Michelle Fitzgerald. Another big edit, I would say, to this point for Michelle. How are the casuals reacting to that?
Yeah, I think at the beginning of this season, my dad had, and I remember Michelle, my dad had no idea who Michelle was. And he was like, what season was that? And then I try to remind him, and then he eventually, I think, figured it out. But with Michelle, I think early on, like, him and I would talk about, okay, like, who are you okay with losing and to get voted out here? Because there were so many people we did not want to get voted out. And every time he would be like, oh yeah, Michelle, like, I don't mind losing Michelle. She's no big deal. She's not that great. But I think in these recent episodes, I think my dad and I'm sure some of the other casuals have kind of come around on Michelle a little bit. I mean, you can't not be impressed with what she's done. I mean, she's been to tribal, I think five times so far, and she hasn't received any votes. She has three fire tokens, one of which she gave to Wendell, which was unfortunate. But I think that last tribal, you know, I was again listening to you guys talk last week about how, you know, it's going to be so obvious if the blue tribe goes to tribal council, Michelle's going to go home. And I was in lockstep with you guys. I thought the exact same thing. Like, there's no way that Michelle doesn't go home here. These three guys are in this tight alliance. They're just going to vote her out, and that's going to be it. But the fact that she managed to position herself so that not only was she, not in danger, she was like in control really of who went home in that last vote in terms of getting rid of Yule. So I have to give props to Michelle. I think she's done really well so far. I think she's well connected, and I don't think she's somebody that people are going to be going after. She has that relationship with Jeremy from early on when they connected on the Ethan vote. I would imagine some of these newer, most of these players that have been on newer seasons are probably more familiar with Michelle. So, like Nick, I don't think anybody's really going to be afraid of her. So unless she's collateral damage in some type of situation where people are targeting Wendell, I think Michelle's in a great spot. And I think, I've said it probably 10 times so far, but if I were to put my stamp on somebody where I would say, I think for sure this person is going to make the final five of this cast, I think I would put that stamp on Michelle. I think she's in a great spot, and I don't think anybody's going to be worried about her.
I think with this merge vote, she would have gone to as many tribal councils this season as she did in the entirety of Ko Rong, which is
wow.
So she is in some sense like learning as she goes. You contrast that to Denise, who has been to already, like in her first season by the final eight, just as many as across Michelle's whole career. So she maybe has the least experience of anyone in the cast, but she's clearly learning on the job and doing a good job of that so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So Jordan, we have our 12 people who have made it through the main game, or I guess there are only 11 now left that have made it through the main game, and we are going to add a 12th, I would imagine. I know we have talked about Tyson, Natalie, and Rob probably standing out as the front runners in that Edge of Extinction challenge, but it occurred to me that we're pretty much never right about anything in this regard. And so I am actually going to officially switch my pick. I feel like Danny Boatwright is going to be our big winner, and she's going to come in and blindside everyone in the spirit of Chris Underwood. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Anyway.
Well, yeah, I guess that's possible, though, right? Because did Chris get a lot of confessionals on Edge of Extinction while he was there? I don't remember that. He did, right?
He certainly wasn't getting like the ream treatment by any stretch, but I think they were like making a deliberate effort for Chris to come out of absolutely nowhere. And I am totally joking in feeling like one of the under the radar Edge of Extinction people will come back. I think it's very unlikely that it's like Amber or Danny in particular, but it is definitely going to be an interesting kind of dynamic in the game, I would imagine, just everyone knowing that the people who returned from Edge of Extinction the first time that was a twist were Rick Devons at the merge and the eventual winner at Final Six, who barely edged out Rick Devons in the finale. Do you have any inkling one way or the other about, in the dark, how much people are going to be concerned about the Edge of Extinction returnee?
To be honest, no, I have no idea what's going to happen. I think it just depends on who comes back. Like, I think they, like, are you asking who, like, are they going to be worried about that person in general? Or are you asking, are they going to be worried about someone returning?
I mean, given what we saw in terms of how crucial it seems to have spent some time on Edge of Extinction to get in good with the jurors, I could see the reaction to that being pretty much everyone in the main game understanding that none of us can afford to let anyone return from Edge and make it to the end.
Yeah, I could definitely see that for sure. But I think it'll depend on who is it, like who's coming back. I think those three that we talked about, Tyson, Boston, Rob, and Natalie, I think all of them pose a big enough threat in themselves without this other consideration of the jurors potentially having that relationship with that person. I don't think whomever it is that comes back from the Edge of Extinction, I really don't think they have much of a chance. Maybe they have more of a chance than Tony of winning the game, but I would be quite surprised if that person that returns ends up making it all the way to the end, unless they just go on some crazy challenge run, which I guess is possible for Tyson and Natalie at this point.
One thing that is just crossing my mind that I could see playing a role at this merge vote, assuming people on this season have seen season 38 and recall how, or at least a couple of them recall and can tell the others how the reentries worked, it may just be assumed. And I think if I were out there, I would err on the side of assuming that whoever reenters will be gifted an idol by the producer. They will just get an idol put in their bag, the same way Devins and Chris Underwood both did.
Wait, did that happen to them?
Yes. People who reenter just get gifted idols. And that would that would very much concern me on this first merge vote.
I didn't remember that. I was in the middle of teaching school, like when Edge of Extinction was on, so I was not like very dialed into what was happening, and I actually did miss a few episodes here and there. But my goodness, that is egregious.
Yeah. So I could see there being some cause for concern about the.
Yeah, like Adam will be all over that, and so he will immediately point that out, and people if that is the case, then whoever returns is screwed.
I certainly don't know that will be the case. You know, they can buy their own hidden immunity idols with 3 fire tokens on Edge of Extinction. And given that is an option available to them, I would not like it if they also then get a bonus idol just for being the re-enterer. But absolutely nothing is off the table as far as I am concerned with regard to the Survivor producers trying to bail out the underdog. Anyway, Jordan, before we get you out of here, do you have an official winner pick at this hour?
Oh man, so hard. I like the two of you. I'm so bad at picking and making predictions and stuff like this. For now, I am going to say, oh geez, let me have, just because I think she's going to go far, give me Michelle. I think Michelle is going to win.
Okay, we got another Michelle truther on board here. Our work here is done, Dom. Dom, anything else you wanted to get to today?
I'm good. Just to say, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Jordan. It's good to hear that you're doing well even in these tough times. And I will be looking for any excuse to get you back in here if you're so inclined.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. And anytime. I'm always free, especially when we're in these quarantine times. I'm always available, and it's always a pleasure to talk to the two of you. And I just, again, want to thank both of you for doing what you do, because, you know, it's not something I no longer have the stomach for, but just being able to podcast on a weekly basis in the way that you guys are doing that, I think you're just doing such a great service to so many people right now who just need a distraction and need something positive to escape what's going on in reality. So thank you to both of you for having me, and thank you to the both of you for doing what you do.
Well, I will address those in reverse order. We very much enjoy doing this and are happy that people get something out of it. So thank you for coming on. And to go back to the more important part of that sentence, Quarantimes is a home run, and I'm going to be stealing that. I'm a big fan of that. So, Jordan, if there is anywhere that you want people to be finding you, and you certainly do not need there to be anywhere, but is there anything you would want to plug in terms of social media at this point?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Like, the start of my New Year's resolution for 2020 was to do some social media distancing with myself and the various social media platforms that I have. So I am not I've disabled my Instagram. I have my Twitter, but I don't I don't log into it. So if people are trying to reach me from there, I apologize. Perhaps there will be a point down the road where I decide to jump back in. But now I'm perfectly content staying out of the the social media sphere, if you will. So there's nothing you need to follow me for. You can follow at MattyFresh23. I believe that's Matt Gagan's Twitter. Why don't you give Matt Gagan a follow and tell him that I said hi and that I sent you.
Is it 23 or 24? I think it might be 24.
Is it 24? Oh, it's 24. Okay. Well, don't do the 23 because then it's going to be the wrong person.
Look,
that's his burner. Fresh, that's his very
that's his burner.
Yeah. 23 has not earned it. Don't give him the validation of that.
Okay. Okay. So Maddie Fresh 24, give him a follow. Other than that, and also too, I mentioned it off the top, and I don't expect anyone to do this, but if you are in a position where you are fortunate and you have access to money that you can donate to people, please consider doing that to any local food banks, things like that. Or if you are thinking on a global scale, there are some people that I met and I care deeply about that live in a small village in Kenya. Who could use like anything at this point, whether it be like $1 or $5, like anything would just make a huge difference to those people. So if you are interested in doing something like that, a website that you can go to do that is HECOM Kenya. So that's one word, HECOM, and then the word Kenya, .com. You can Google it as well and it will come up. But if there's one person out there that can, donate and contribute a little bit, that'll just make a huge difference to the lives of those people. So that's all I have left to say.
I will get the ball rolling. I'm doing $20 as soon as we sign up, and I encourage other listeners to join me.
I appreciate it, Colin. Thank you so much.
All right. So Dom is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. In case you do want to social media follow us, although I very much respect and admire, Jordan, your position of just being out the game. I think that is the end goal, but unfortunately, I'm too desperate of a narcissist still. Thank you one more time for taking so much of your morning, I guess, afternoon here with us. What else do you have going on, honestly, at this point? So, Jordan, we would definitely, to echo what Dom said, love to have you back in here very soon to talk about who knows what. I very much hope that it will not be too long before that day comes. But to the people who have made it this far, of course, thank you guys for listening. We will be back next week after we see how all of this merge action plays out. Until then, take care, everybody.